out tomorrow on politics. This episode is brought to you by Caroline Knox, Will M., and Brian Kennedy, and they are helping us do this every week, and maybe you will too. When you become a supporter of Canada Land, you get the Thursday edition, which only our supporters get. It's called Off the Record, and it is about what happens behind the scenes here and why. You get ad-free versions of our podcast. You get discounts on our merchandise. You get tickets to our live events. You are helping to keep the lights on in our small news company. Please buy Canadian for your brain, for your information, buy Canadian, and become a supporter at canadaland.com/join or click on the link in the show notes. You can email me about today's show at jesse@canadaland.com. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Caleb Thompson. Today's episode was fact-checked by Julian Abraham. Max Collins is our director of audio. I am the editor and publisher. Our theme music is by So Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV, 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it.
I'm Noor Azriye, and today we're talking about the news. We'll talk about why pets are becoming luxury items. We'll talk about the RCMP's quiet investigation into possible war crimes in Gaza. But mostly, we'll talk about grocery store whiplash. Right now, they've got us waving the flag, but have we forgotten the greedflation? The boycotts? What about the bread price fixing?
A judge in Ontario approved a $500 million settlement in a long-running bread price fixing case.
That's a lot of dough. Wait for that. Vass Bednar, public policy expert, grocery expert, co-author of The Big Fix, and writes the popular newsletter Rags to Riches. Vass, welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me.
Grocery chains in Canada are notoriously terrible.
The country's biggest retailers, they broke the law.
Bread price fixing by grocers in Canada.
An alleged cartel. Loblaw, Sobeys, Metro, Walmart, Giant Tiger.
Grocery giants are struggling to win back their trust.
Canadians are fed up with high food costs.
Loblaws is out of control, a movement to boycott its stores.
Not just Loblaws, as you know, but superstores, Value Marts, independent grocers, wholesale clubs, Zehrs, Provigo, Dominion, on it goes, even Shoppers Drug Mart.
For those of you who weren't in the studio, Vass had her eyes closed the whole time.
I was listening.
Reflecting. Vass, we fucking hated grocery stores, right? Like deep unifying cross-country rage just a year ago. I remember the Galen Weston moment.
Mm-hmm. $4.99, that is a 150% price increase in one day. That is such bull. Galen Weston, president's choice.
The Reddit group Loblaws is out of control with like thousands of people on that Reddit thread.
The group is asking for a reduction in prices of 15% and removal of member-only pricing.
There was this organized, coordinated Canadian boycott of Loblaws like around this time last year in May of 2024.
Many say they will boycott Loblaws stores this month in an effort to make their demands heard.
This boycott is kicking off as the company is reporting nearly $500 million in profits in its latest quarter.
Here's some headlines from last year. Frustrated shoppers boycott Loblaws stores for month of May. Small grocers, co-op seeing boost in customers. Loblaw calls boycott misguided. Remember this era, Vass?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think about it often? I feel like I think about it often.
Well, I do.
You know, back then, pissed off Canadians were boycotting grocery stores. So how the hell are we in this moment now where buying groceries is somehow a glorious act, a glorious expression of patriotism?
Grocery shopping has become an act of patriotism.
Took me a little bit of extra time to look at products, but all Canadian.
We have to do what we can to support our own economy.
Let me teach you how to buy Canadian at the grocery store. It is harder than it looks.
How much have you been hearing this kind of sentiment, you know, buy Canadian only these recent weeks?
Very popular item in cooking is onions, and it's a product of Canada, and it's on sale today. Maybe I should grab them, actually. I'm going to grab some onions. Cavendish is a Canadian-made product, proudly Canadian company.
I feel like grocery stores are pulling off the rebrand of a generation, like better than the Crocs rebrand. Their reputations were in the gutter. You couldn't have caught me dead or alive in a Loblaws last year, or in Crocs, for that matter. But it feels like they have been resurrected. Grocers, big grocers, have been, like, resurrected as holy sites of Canadian patriotism.
Holy sites.
It just feels like they've made a comeback. They've really capitalized on this moment.
I think they're frontliners in a lot of ways to that initial threat of tariffs and when people started getting a bit more interested in origins and kind of composition of food. I don't know that it necessarily gave them back a halo. The everyday activity of grocery shopping is increasingly a hostile activity. More surveillance, more barriers as you go out and to guide you.
Mm-hmm.
This hasn't been in Canada as much as it's been in the U.S., but more product behind lock and
locked.
Key. So I think people still feel skepticism or mistrust, and it comes down to pricing, transparency, fluctuations,
mm-hmm.
their understandability. Coffee's really expensive now.
Mm-hmm.
That's not just a jacking up the margins. That is a climate change and 100%. Geopolitical reality.
Mm-hmm.
So those are learning moments too, and it's difficult to do that when you're just grabbing at the shelf. But in terms of our experiences maybe with pricing algorithms or app store ecosystems, loyalty programs, and our information and kind of what's inferred around us, that's just part of the bigger conversation around the future of Canada and what it's going to mean to kind of reclaim our independence and our freedom and choice as consumers.
But it does feel like, I don't know, I've walked into a grocery store, like I've walked into a No Frills recently, and it was like Canadian flags draped on the aisles. And look, I want to know if something's Canadian, but there's just something so strange about grocers being the front lines of our patriotism. And totally agree with you. They have in some way become that because of the trade war. But I hear you when you say things like, people are still skeptical, and I'm going to get to that in, like, just a second. But I just feel like grocers have benefited a lot from the elbows-up moment that we're living through. Like, Mark Carney benefited because it won the election, but I feel like I don't walk into a Loblaws, and my first thought is, I'm angry to be here, more so like I'm not going to buy those lemons because they're American. It feels like it's shifted kind of my own internal workings.
Mm.
But I do agree with you. There's a lot of skepticism. And I think that the patriotic shield is cracking because right now, as we're talking, as grocers are basking in the glory of their rebrand, we're finally seeing the fallout of one of the biggest corporate scandals in Canadian history, which is the bread fixing scandal.
If you bought bread in the last 20 years, you're likely eligible for some dough as part of a bread price fixing scandal in this country.
A judge in Ontario approved a $500 million settlement in a long running bread price fixing case.
This really haunts us, right? It particularly haunts Loblaw Company, who voluntarily complied years ago with the Competition Bureau's inquiry into potential price fixing related to bread. They had their own kind of version of a settlement with Canadians when they offered a few years ago now $5 gift cards to everyone.
Another $96 million is accounted for in a gift card program from 2017, which Loblaw used to try and make amends for coordinating bread prices for years.
Dude, what a joke.
And this is separate but complimentary because it's a class action lawsuit. So it is quite a bit of money. I do have a girlfriend who confessed last week. She feels like she's been refreshing a page, being like, how can I get in on this? You know, we were all affected. Maybe it's a way to sort of put it in the rearview mirror, too. I mean, back to grocers, I do hear you. There's an appreciation for how they're helping us wayfind and maybe make different decisions or just like learn more about food and think about what we're consuming and what our dollars are supporting. But it goes back to this like public imagination and opportunity position, because what else could Mark Carney do related to groceries and the cost of living? Do we need to use government's power from a procurement standpoint? Do we need a publicly owned cooperative for groceries? Do we want to drop all the bullshit like storing, slotting fees, shelving fees, whatever? Can we imagine an alternative model? Maybe it's more online based. Maybe it starts in urban areas more. Like, what can we build? What else can we do? Those are the questions I think we should be pushing ourselves on. And like when you played that second clip, my eyes were mostly open, but I felt emotional. I felt like I was watching the climax of a Marvel film, and it just tugged at me for a second because I have found it quite charming, this idea that we can save the economy and save a bit of money at the same time. And look, something as simple as Canadians just changing their travel plans has had repercussions for the U.S. It's still powerful. And back to power, it's hard sometimes to feel like small micro changes we make in our everyday lives in aggregate, creating that sense of togetherness as Canadians is actually a good thing. So, yeah, grocers are generally benefiting from that. But I'm also appreciative when I can see that sticker or, you know, that flag. I'm scanning for it, too. What I'm nervous about, I mean, nervous is a strong word. I haven't quite had a lot of experience with it yet, is that triangle or the T for tariff. Because a lot of the pre-tariff inventory is running out now.
Oh, yeah. And all the prices are now.
So
yeah,
we're seeing these like price jumps, too, where it's kind of like
coffee's on that.
I just read about, I thought that class action stuff was settled. Everyone's trying to save money.
Yep.
And that's a new pain point. And maybe that pain point of the T, capital T, is going to be something that we subconsciously start to punish grocers for in our minds. Right? So this could be a kind of hedonistic euphoria where it was like we were all kind of in something and navigating something that was common. And now it's going to be like, every time I walk by the coffee aisle, I'm just like, oh, my God, what is going on over here?
Maybe I should try tea.
Yeah, I know. You know.
After the break, we'll talk about what it would mean to rethink our country's food infrastructure. And we'll talk about Canada's most quoted grocery expert, the food professor. It's weird because, like, it feels like we were having such deep conversations about what the future of our grocers should look like. We were talking about monopolies.
A June 2023 Competition Bureau report recommended all levels of government act to increase competition in the grocery industry.
There's competition and more competition. That means new entrants coming into the market and challenging the incumbents. And that is exactly what happened in markets all, elsewhere around the world, in Australia, for example, in the UK.
I feel like that conversation is getting lost in the sauce of the trade war. But what you're saying is that this is also another moment where something like that could happen, like conversations could resurface.
Again, there are other business models. It's just, what are our hopes? What is the role of the state? What can we catalyze? And where might we want to see price caps or price controls? I've written about this in the past. The NDP had it in their platform, the kind of grocery basket, right? How do we resist inflationary pressures? How do we guarantee that a certain subset of baby formula, pet food, core nutritious foods remain at an accessible price point for people? That's a more serious question. And we have to look at it differently than we used to 5 or 10 years ago because the global context is so different. And Carney's leadership, coming from Bank of Canada, Bank of England, being kind of like a boardroom guy, I think he does appreciate alternative models and how businesses work and also when they don't.
I'm glad you brought up Mark Carney because he did do something about the grocery prices that I feel like hasn't been getting enough attention. There's been a few international outlets picking it up, but not that many domestic.
Let me read you some headlines. Yeah. Canada new tariffs on U.S. dropped to nearly zero with exemptions, Oxford says from Bloomberg. Carney dropped most American tariffs day after meeting Trump. Toronto Sun. Canada's new tariffs on U.S. dropped to nearly zero with exemptions. That's the National Post. And elbows down, Canada's retaliation against Trump's tariffs is getting complicated from the logic. So Prime Minister Mark Carney has announced a six-month tariff exemption for products used in Canadian manufacturing, processing, food and beverage packaging, and for items related to healthcare, public safety and national security. So those items that you were talking about, the prices are going up. He actually is reversing course on some of that stuff. He says that it was a temporary measure intended to minimize the negative effects of the counter tariffs. So we'll see if Carney reimposes them in the future. But as a result, he's gotten a ton of criticism about being wishy-washy. You know, when you compare his actions to his campaign slogans, like, this isn't really giving elbows up, it's giving elbows down. But the food professor, who's probably the most quoted guy in the country on groceries.
We're joined now by Sylvain Charlebois,
co-host of the Food Professor podcast, Professor Sylvain Charlebois.
Sylvain Charlebois est avec nous, spécialiste de l'industrie agroalimentaire.
Sylvain, we always like having you on the show because you always give us a few tips and tricks. Let's talk about the impact that inflation is having on those grocery bills.
Well, the food inflation rate at the grocery store is 2% more than the general inflation rate. So people are absolutely noticing higher prices everywhere at the grocery store.
He's saying that this is a good move, reversing course, because even though it was a politically delicate choice, it was an economically sound choice. And I just want to note the food professor long criticized for being soft on industry and hard on government. He's also made a lot of edgy and controversial comments online on Twitter. But I don't know. What do you make of Mark Carney dropping the elbows up stuff when it comes to the grocery prices?
I think that seems savvy. Sorry for my own whiplash on the tea and the symbolism and what to be looking out for and when. This is a ongoing process of give and take as we lead up to the major renegotiation. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe constructive that the food professor, that Sylvain, could show and rationalize his support for something. I've engaged with him a bit online, which is always a startling experience, but I did have the opportunity to guest lecture his class last year, and I would say that was a positive. I was warmly received and also received a beautiful tote bag.
Oh, nice.
For my efforts that I have received compliments on. So
Whoa.
Connected to the food professor, and sometimes a good reminder that also people are real. We're all real behind our avatars and our online personas. And I did get to meet a person who seemed quite different than who he can be online sometimes.
Okay, so the food professor, kind of abrasive to critics on Twitter, maybe he's not such a bad dude in person. But, you know, something that he talks about often is the fact that the previous Liberal government did a lot of, like, political theatrics when it comes to greedflation.
They were dealing with this political hot potato with this greenflation campaign going on, which led many Canadians to believe that there is profiteering going on instead of just saying, no, there's no profiteering. They're just passing the buck on to the Bureau.
And it was all just like a bunch of sloganeering.
Come to a hearing.
It is really a low-hanging political fruit for the Liberals to go after CEOs right now because, let's face it, not a whole lot of people actually trust food companies right now. So it's a really easy target.
It's interesting to see him kind of shift in some of that criticism because in a recent op-ed piece, he said things like, symbols like elbows up and Canada's not for sale may have mobilized supports during a volatile political moment, but they should never substitute for sound economic governance. Rhetoric can only go so far. Did you feel like there was a lot of political theatrics when it came to the previous government's relationship with grocers last year? And do you feel like we're moving away from that, that Mark Carney is moving away from that?
Again, such early days. I had mixed feelings around the kind of like marching grocery CEOs or telecom CEOs to Ottawa to like meet with them, the kind of feeling of we're going to the principal's office now. But I also had an appreciation for like maybe in Canada, that's what we do. And we're able to have these like frank and tough and honest conversations and get those business leaders in the room who aren't saying we're going to threaten to leave or we're not even going to come to your meeting, and to meet with the minister and have these conversations. At the same time, I hunger for and crave more experimentation, innovation, pilots. In New York City, there are major conversations right now from one of the mayoral candidates around a city-owned grocery store. There's momentum for that in Chicago. What momentum is here? What else can we try? What can we envision? What niche, smaller versions of this might we have in places that we can scale up and grow? People are hungry for alternatives. And I think a lot of the frustration in Canada with that movement, as you were saying, you know, Loblaw is out of control, was just that constraint and feeling like there weren't enough alternatives and there wasn't a choice, and that sort of sense of defeat that you have to go. Anyway, to me, that's maybe I'm like always reading in my own frustrations or projecting like what I think it could be. We are in a moment. We're always in a moment. But like this is a particular moment of like possibility and optimism and imagination. And I think in a minority context, that can be quite promising, too. And part of that is probably going to be a reimagining of elements of our economy, both to produce more in Canada, build more in Canada, but maybe have other models, other kind of profit models, worker-owned cooperatives, state-owned. Again, there are alternatives out there. If we can imagine them, we can bring them to life too.
Grocers are still up to some pretty crazy shit. I knew Big Brother dystopia was coming to grocery stores because I've stood in a self-checkout line. The vibes are really weird. And I think they might get weirder because I saw this article on the Globe and Mail, published by Vass Bednar. Have you ever heard? headline, supermarket workers are wearing body cameras. Welcome to the new dystopia. Give me a rundown. You know, you've had your finger on grocers for a while. Was this a long time coming? Did you expect this?
No, I didn't expect it. And I've been fascinated by these pilots that have been run by Loblaw. I've also been run by Walmart, and there's anticipation that they'll be expanded. And again, when the largest companies are doing something, others follow suit.
Yeah.
I learned a lot from writing the piece. It's just a short piece, but I am the kind of person who not only reads the comments, like I get in there in the comments I don't have a funny name. Like I don't have, you don't get a response from like Vaseline55. Like you get a response on the Globe and Mail from someone named Vass Bednar, and it's me. My issue with the cameras is that it feels like an underinvestment in terms of this core problem. And businesses are saying, well, we're investing in worker safety and this helps workers feel more safe. And I did hear from some people both who have worked in these settings or who want to see workers better protected that they're like, if this helps them, then that's great. I agree. Things that help workers feel safer on the job are good. However, there are plenty of cameras already.
There's security guards at most
in
of
these
grocery stores.
Commercial settings. Yeah. So the other motivator is loss, right? Retail loss that people are stealing. And there's a cost associated with that. So this is really what we're trying to mitigate. And yeah, look, to me, it's a bit of a slippery slope. I actually considered buying a body cam because you can get them for like $30 or $35. You could buy it at Walmart. Or buy it in bulk from a company that primarily supplies like police forces, right? And then bring it to the retail floor and not increase people's pay,
right?
Not pay people more to do more security, or not just frankly accept the cost of loss. Like, I guess the counterpoint is, which some people were writing to me in the comments, does it potentially ratchet up the hostility?
I was just going to say,
like, that the reason I thought about buying one, if it just to come to a meeting and just be like, blah, 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 and someone being like, Vass, what the heck is that? And be like, oh, you don't mind, right? It's just a camera.
Like, no, I mind.
Or it's like when you're on a Zoom and it's like, this meeting is being recorded.
I'm
and
like,
you're just kind of like, changes the vibe. Or even when I'm lecturing, right?
Totally.
Even when I'm lecturing, I'm like, I will deliver a better lecture or a better guest talk without the
camera.
Layer of that. So
yeah,
it was also just me thinking about like how our cameras changing how we experience everything. If I go ask someone who's working on the floor, like where to find something, there are certain items I always have trouble finding. Mm-hmm. Where is red pepper jelly? Is it in the jams, or it's not always where you think it's going to be?
Clear.
where are the souvlaki sticks? Like, I need them. But I don't want to be on, you know, in direct camera in a particular way.
But also, if someone came up to you, like, and you're, like, lost in the grocery store and someone came up to you with a camera stuck to their chest and they're like, can I help you? I automatically feel like you think I'm stealing because you're coming up to me. Even if it wasn't the case, it's just the hostility of the camera.
Well, and I think statistically, people aren't getting hurt, right? Mm. Workers are not getting hurt. Corporations' bottom line is getting hurt. Cameras don't seem like the right solution to that. I don't disagree that it's a problem, but just as I don't believe it is a cashier's responsibility to try to stop someone from walking out with something.
Totally.
These are huge societal issues and, in some instances, formal crime rings.
But maybe it has something to do with the fact that now there is a full digital catalog of what the worker's doing all day. How many stocks have been, where are the shelves, and how many people you talk to, and what times are most, I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's just something about that. We talked a lot about facing the camera, but even just wearing the camera.
So typically, the way they've been deployed now is it's a choice when to turn them on. So they're not always recording, but I do think that's people's assumption that it might be the default or that's also the easiest thing to do. But you're right. It is a tacit form of surveillance of your peers. It's more information for the company and information that they can use to make business decisions. So I think it's worth resisting for sure. But I also don't want to punish any worker that does feel safer wearing it or doesn't have a choice in doing that. I think we need to remember where to direct our disappointment.
The body cams feel like the next step, this evolution of grocers and tech. Is there anything else in that intersection that's raising any flags for you?
One B that I cannot get out of my bonnet is the kind of invisible use of algorithmic tools. It's really hard to see. We do see companies bragging about it in company calls or stepping out in kind of a consumer retail report context, but it freaks me out. It's being called the end of a fixed price. So you and I both have coffees on our desk. We're probably always paying the same amount for coffee, but often in closed app ecosystems or when prices are set digitally or even with those electronic labels, prices can fluctuate and shift based on the time of day, the profile of the person purchasing. We just saw reporting in the U.S. from last week that Delta Airlines was found to deliberately charge single travelers more for their airline seat.
Are you flying solo? If so, you might just be paying a secret penalty.
So these kind of calibrations, it stresses me out because it's so invisible to us that it's difficult to know. So there are places in the economy where we know that's going to happen. Airlines, fixed amount of seats, time pressures, we sort of understand that prices shift, but we have no appreciation of just how sophisticated that is. You and I shopping for diapers online.
Yeah, totally shopping for
adult or otherwise. I don't want the economy to be an algorithmic hall of mirrors. I want people to be able to opt out. I want people to be able to explain their prices. But it's a very kind of, in the most kind of academic economist way, that question is like a conversation about optimization. Oh, if there are different willingness to pay, then of course you should charge me $8 for that bag of chips because I'm going to go for the Miss Vickies. But like your threshold is $5.50 or something. Honestly, I keep seeing bags of chips for $5. I'm like, what is happening here?
Dude, Miss Vickie's is bankrupting me monthly.
And it's like a housewarming gift now for me. I'm like, here are two giant bags of Miss Vickie's.
Lime and black pepper? What is that? That's the best flavor.
Salt and vinegar.
Oh, that one's good too.
Straight to your brain.
Oh, it's so good.
Anyway, so to me, that kind of pricing is quite interesting because it's invisible. But I think the more people learn about it or realize that it is occurring, the more kind of disappointed and pissed off you are. And there's always that fragility of trust. We touched on it between citizen and state. But there's also been a huge erosion of trust between business and consumer, right? And we need to find ways to rebuild that. And part of rebuilding that is the state demonstrating that it has our backs and that it's realistic about what we're up against when we go shopping for everyday things.
That is our show for today. Thank you for joining me. You can email me about the show at noor@canadaland.com. I read everything you send me. You can also find me posting on Blue Sky. Just search up my name, Noor Azriya, and click the profile with a pretty picture. Vass, where can people find you?
On Blue Sky. on X. I'm Bass B. And I am on LinkedIn, actually, if you want to connect.
And you publish for the Globe and Mail.
And I publish for the Globe and Mail. And you know what? I get to hear from the most interesting Canadians every time I have an opportunity like this, like being on Canada Land. Thank you so much. And thank you to your listeners.
This episode is produced by the one, the only James Nicholson. Our associate producer is Lucy Lemonnier. She also does the fact-checking. Mixing and mastering is by Tristan Capicchione. Our director of audio is Max Collins. The editor and publisher of Canada Land is Jesse Brown. Theme music is by So Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Thank you.